Sue Masick with Precious Memories, the title track from her latest album. Sue is a musician and social activist from Kentucky, with nearly 40 years of playing music solo and as a banjo player for the Real World String Band. Precious Memories features the songs of folk pioneer and activist Sarah Ogan Gunning, and it's part of an original play about Sarah Ogan Gunning's life and work written by Cy Khan. We caught up with Sue Masick at home in Kentucky. So it's great to talk to you today, Sue.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you, and I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Well, I love the album. I've very much enjoyed playing it on Folk Roots Radio. I thought what I'd like to do at the start of this interview, though, is let's talk about you and your music, because as I mentioned in the preamble, you've been playing music for 40 years as a solo artist and also as part of a string band. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about how you got into music and where you are with that at this time.
Okay, be glad to. I actually started performing when I was about three. My mother is a musician, and I started singing with her and then playing the guitar when I was nine. And then in the 60s, I ended up at the Appalachian South Folklife Center. It was started by Don West. And it was there that I learned to play the old-time banjo from really wonderful traditional artists, Oscar Wright and Frank George, Blant Nowlan, and these folks are kind of legendary, at least in West Virginia. And so I started learning to play clawhammer, and then in 77 I moved from Kansas, where I was born and raised, to Kentucky, and became a founder of the Real World String Band. And we traveled and toured for about 2.5 decades. We still perform occasionally, but we were pretty heavy into touring when we were younger. All women string band. So we were sort of one of the first in the revivalist movement. There were maybe two or three other all-women bands at that time. And we played everywhere from the picket lines in the coal fields to the Lincoln Center up in New York. Then we did a tour of Italy, and we played in Canada. And all this time, I sort of maintained my own solo experience, some of it being I was an artist in residence for the Kentucky Arts Council and for 25 years. And I took a break from that, but I am now back on their roster and working on a few of the, you know, just a few things, mostly local here around Washington County where I live. Kentucky is one of the few arts councils that actually has a master apprentice program. And I was an apprentice first when I worked with Blanche Coldiron, and then I have been a master artist for Aaron Fitzgerald, and I'm waiting to hear any minute now about whether I'm going to have an apprentice this season. And I was the first community scholar, which means I'm a lay folklorist. I did that through the schools mostly, but then ended up doing some resource surveys and such. So that's sort of a snapshot of my performing career. And one other thing that's really important to me is that both the Appalachian South Folklife Center and a place called the Highlander Center in Newmarket, Tennessee, are places where activists can come and learn how to use their music as a tool for social justice. And that's been the focus of my music and of my band's music. My band's been touring for 40 years, or been active for 40 years. When I take pride in what I've done, it's because it has had something to do with either letting people know about situations or changing their minds about situations.
Come all you coal miners, wherever you may be, listen to my story that I relate to thee. My name is nothing extra, but the truth to you I'll tell. I am a coal miner's wife. I'm sure I wish you well. Coal mining is most dangerous work in our land today, with plenty of dirty slaving work and very little pay. Coal miners, won't you wake up and open your eyes and see what the dirty capitalist system is doing to you and me. They take your very life, but they take our children's lives. Fathers away from children and husbands away from wives. Coal miners, won't you organize wherever you may be? Make this a land of freedom for workers like you and me. You can't work no more. And what do you get for your living but a dollar at the company store? A rundown shack to live in, snow and rain pours through the top. You have to pay your company rent. your paying never stop. Sink this capitalist system in the darkest pits of hell.
So I sense that your strong feelings about the importance of social activism and, you know, dealing with issues of social justice probably drove you into exploring the life of Sarah Ogan Gunning. I mean, she seemed to be such an important figure, particularly in your area of the world, in Appalachia and the coal mining area down there. What I'd like to do in this part of the conversation is to get you to talk a little bit about Sarah and the importance that she had within, you know, the development of folk music.
Okay, well, I'll start by saying I met Sarah first at the Highlander Center. And spent, I can't recall exactly how many times she came to gatherings that I also attended, but got to know her there, and then my band toured with her. So I knew Sarah as from afar for a while and admired her work. But then when I got to know her personally, it solidified my desire to make sure the world knew about her. And Archie Green, who was a noted folklorist, at one time said that I should write a book about Sarah, and I'm not exactly patient enough to write a book. So having both this CD and the play that I do about her as a vehicle to let people know about what drove her into writing and singing, and then the power that her music had to mostly inform and back in the coal fields then to kind of give people resolve. And as it said in the play, you know, to give people heart and nerve to stand up against what was going on in the coal fields.
Because she grew up in a coal mining family, didn't she?
She did. She grew up in Bell County, Kentucky. And it was during, it was just prior to the Depression. But it was a time in the coal fields when the coal companies pretty much had free rein to do whatever they wanted. And it was all profit driven. And so you lived in a coal camp. They owned the housing. When your husband either got hurt, got killed, or lost his job because he was speaking up against the coal companies, the whole family would get kicked out of the house. You also had to buy your supplies, your food, and everything from the company store because they were only paid in what is called scrip. So it was notes from the coal company. And the prices at those stores were double what somebody might pay at a local grocery. So it was a time when they were being incredibly oppressed, and the dangers in the mine were, I mean, there just were no regulations about safety. So Sarah herself lost her father, one of her brothers, two brothers, I believe, and another brother that was severely injured in the mines. And if you didn't get killed by the rocks, you'd eventually get black lung. And that's what took her father and her first husband. She also lost two babies to starvation during that time. The Depression then started in the 30s. So, and Sarah was born in 1910. So her adult life was right as the Depression hit.
Oh, you're gonna be surprised, babe of mine. Oh, you're gonna be surprised, babe of mine. You're gonna be surprised, for I'm gonna organize. Yes, I'm going around this world, babe of mine. Oh, I'm going write you a letter, babe of mine. Oh, I'm gonna write you a letter, babe of mine. I'm gonna write you a letter when the living gets better. Yes, I'm gonna organize, babe of mine. Mine. See the workers, children, and wives, babe of mine. See the workers, children, and wives are compelled to save their lives. So I'm gonna organize, babe of mine. Oh, I love the union man, babe of mine. Yes, I love the union man, babe of mine. I love the union man, the way they're treated is a sin. So I'm gonna organize, babe of mine.
When she started to play music, was that because she wanted to find a way to tell people about what was going on?
Yes. She ended up in New York City on the Lower East Side, and that was because of the situation she was living in. After she lost one of her children, they tried to save the other two or three and Sarah was very sick, by getting her and her husband and kids up to New York. So she was exiled by poverty and her politics. So when she got up in New York, she started hanging out with folks like Woody Guthrie and Leadbelly and Pete Seeger, who was just 15 when she first met him. She started teaching them the songs that she knew, that both the ones she wrote and the ones that she passed on, that they got 400 songs in the Library of Congress from her family. So they were all a singing family. And her half-sister, Aunt Molly Jackson, and her brother, Jim Garland, were writing songs. And so Sarah thought, well, I can write songs about my own experience. And so she wrote the bulk of her songs in New York, and I think some because she always longed to be back in the mountains, but also because she wanted people outside to know what was going on down in Kentucky, and hoping that if enough people knew what was going on, that things could be changed.
And I think it was quite normal to take traditional songs and to write some other lyrics that would, you know, allow you to tell your story at the same time?
Yes. You know, I don't think that Sarah wrote many songs that were original tunes. And I think that's because primarily she sang a cappella, and those tunes that she grew up with just would take over. You know, I don't think it was so purposeful, like saying, well, gee, I'm going to use this song. I think it just, she'd start saying the words or thinking the words, and they'd fit into a tune she already knew. And it was a custom back then to write new lyrics to old songs. Florence Reese, who was somebody my band and I also knew, wrote Which Side Are You On to an old gospel called Lay the Lilies Low, I believe is the name of it. And Florence and Sarah were both incredible influences on so many of us who grew up here, or grew up, who worked here in the coal fields with our music. Feel really blessed to have known both of them.
Come and listen to my story, come and listen to my song. I'll tell you of a hero who now is dead and gone. I'll tell you of a young lad, his age was but 19. He was the bravest Union man that I have ever seen. Harry Sims was a pal of mine, we labored side by side. expecting to be shot on sight or taken for a ride by those dirty coal operator gun thugs who roam from town to town, shooting down the union men where they could be found. Harry Sims was walking up the track that bright sunshiny day. He was a youth of courage, his step was light and gay. He did not know the gun thugs was hiding on the way to kill our brave young comrade that bright sunshiny day. Harry Sims died on Brush Creek in 1932. He organized the miners into the NMU. He gave his life and struggled, it was all that he could do. He died for the Union, also for me and you.
So it's clear that there was a strong feeling on your behalf to try and tell this story. I'd like to ask you how the collaboration with Cy Kahn developed. I mean, he has a great folk career in his own right, but I'm interested to know how you came together and, you know, this idea of sharing Sarah's songs became the idea for a stage play as well.
I have known Cy for probably about 30 years. Our band and he crossed paths several times, and just I had admired him before I ever met him, and at one point knew every single song he'd written and could play it and sing it. So back in 2012, he was doing a residency at the University of Kentucky. They called me and asked if I couldn't set up some concerts for him. And one of the concerts ended up being in Louisville, and he invited me to perform with him on stage. And after we finished the concert, as is common with musicians everywhere, we decided we were hungry. And so we went to this little falafel place not too far from where we did the concert. And I had just lost my day job, and so I'm 66, so that was being kind of a fearful thing for me. And he was asking what I was thinking about doing. And I said, well, you know, I have always wanted to do, we have a Chautauqua here. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not sure. I feel like
it's
I should
where
be.
Where people present programs in character for people. And so it's through the Kentucky Humanities Council. And so I thought I could do that because I knew Sarah well enough that I kind of knew her mannerisms and a newer story. And when I told him that, he immediately thought, oh, we need to do a play. So within a day, we had decided that he was going to write the play. Since he was here, we went into the archives at Berea and the University of Kentucky and started working on it. And by the middle of November, he had the first draft of the script in my hands. And so it happened like a whirlwind to me, and I've never acted. So it's been a real learning process for me, but I think having known Sarah it gave me a big boost. And I remember lyrics well, so memorizing, though it was quite daunting to get 35 pages of script to memorize, it became easier than I thought it might.
Dreadful memories, how they haunt me, how they ever pierce my soul, how the workers and their children died from hunger and from cold. Hungry fathers and worried mothers living in those dreadful shacks. Little children cold and hungry with no clothing on their backs. Dreadful gun thugs and stool pigeons always flock around our door. What's the crime that we've committed? Nothing, only that we're poor. When I think of all the heartaches and all the things that we've been through, then I wonder how much longer and what a working man can do. Really, friends, it doesn't matter whether you are black or white. The only way we'll ever change things is to fight and fight and fight. We will have to join the union. They will help us find a way how to get a better living and for our work get better pay.
I imagine because of your passion for social justice yourself and knowing so much about her life story, you probably find it very easy to get in character, particularly as she was a singer-songwriter as well.
Yes, yes. And in fact, in many ways, I modeled my professional life after Sarah's. At one time, when some of us in the band were on a picket line and there were snipers up in the woods, so we were terrified, I sat there and I thought, now, if Sarah can do this, I can. Even, you know, a decade after she was, she was still alive at the time, but I think of how much courage she gave me to do what frightened me, and it does, not just physically, but, you know, stand up in front of people and sing songs and that. It takes a little courage sometimes.
And it's a one-woman show. Is there anyone, any other characters appear in the show with you?
Not literally. I'm the only living person, but in the performance, her half-sister, Aunt Molly, has just been buried that day. And she and Aunt Molly really did not get along, and it's almost like they hated each other. It was a love-hate relationship, I think. And so the play looks at all the situations and the troubles in the minds and what life was like in New York City, but it also deals with Sarah reconciling with Aunt Molly and understanding some things that she hadn't until she really started musing about it that night. And that lends a lot of humor because their relationship was so fiery.
Come on, friends, let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, let's go down, down on the picket line. As we went down on the picket line, keep them scabs out of mind. Who's gonna win the strike? Come on, we'll show you the way. Come on, friends, let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, let's go down, down on the picket line. We went out one morning before daylight, and I was sure we'd have a fight. The scabs turned squirrely and ran away. We went back the very next day. Come on, friends, let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, let's go down, down on the picket line. We all went out on the railroad track to meet them scabs and turn them back. We won that strike, I'm glad to see. say, come on, we'll show you the way. Come on, friends, let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, let's go down, down on the picket line. Come on, friends, let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, let's go down, down on the picket line.
Can we talk about how the album fits in with the stage show? Because one of the things I do like about the album is that you have some bonus tracks that have been added to them, and I think it would be good just to give people an overview of the album itself. And it's available now on Strictly Country Records, but just give people a feel for what they can expect to get when they pick one up.
The album, as Cy puts it, is it's a cast album for the play, which so it includes every song in the play except for some snippets of a couple of gospels I do in the play. And the guest artist, I feel so blessed, Alice Gerard, who's another one of my heroines, and to have Alice Gerard and Cy Conn singing along with me is one of the high points in my life. And then we were joined by Dan Hood and Ron Brendel, and Cy's wonderful engineer Chris Garges did the recording and mixing. But we added bonus tracks because we thought it was important for people to understand that Sarah grew up in a family of musicians, and both Aunt Molly and Jim wrote songs. So we decided to add those, a few songs of theirs, to kind of give that concept to folks who listened. They were known as the Singing Garland family, and they played with folks like Burl Ives and the Almanac Singers. And so it's sort of the context that Sarah grew up in, and I think it helps the album a great deal to have that, those bonus tracks in it.
Can we talk about the live experience with the show itself? Obviously, that it exists as a play. Have you put it on through, I imagine, it all throughout Kentucky? I just wondered where you've been able to take the play so far.
Well, I have taken it Kentucky, sort of the southern and central Appalachian states. It's been in Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, Virginia, Tennessee, North Carolina. And it's a very versatile play, and I can carry all the props in my Toyota Corolla. So I have been able to do it in venues as varied as a friend's basement to, the University of Kentucky's Fine Arts Center, Singletary Center, and, which is a big theater. I did Indiana, Pennsylvania. I did it in a 400 seat theater, which is a lot for as intimate as this play is. And I did that without a microphone. So it was, still people heard me. And as you mentioned earlier, before we got on, I can be very loud when I need to be. So, and it's ideally set in an intimate theater because, well, it's just an intimate evening with Sarah. She's in her house slippers.
I think with the current situation, there has been lots of talk and politicking around the whole idea of this concept that I know certain states in the U.S. particular, where they feel that the unions need to somehow be restricted in their activities. And a lot of what she sang about are issues, I think, that are just as important today.
Oh, I think so, too. I think if the Occupy movement had known Sarah, that she'd have been one of their major spokespersons, I think, even though they didn't want to have a major spokesperson. But I think her songs I really started thinking about her again when that was happening, because she really spoke about the income gap and believed that the unions were one of the major ways people could get together and have their voices heard. And in the coal mine, and that was the only way people could get together and have their voices heard. And throughout time, the coal companies have understood that, and they've fought it. And I think the same is true for all of the giant corporations. They don't want people to have a way to fight, to do anything that might restrict their profit.
I wanted to thank you for spending the time to talk to us today. If people want to learn more about your music and the Precious Memories stage play, how can they do that?
There's two ways that they can find out more about that. One is I'm on Facebook, so people are quite welcome to join me as a friend on Facebook. Also, I have a website, which is just SueMasek.com.
Well, look, that's great. I wanted to finish with another song from the album. We've been weaving music throughout our interview today, but I'd like to play The Girl of Constant Sorrow at the end, because I find it's a fascinating song and goes back to, you know, when you hear a woman sing this song, which is, you know, basically a gender switch on the man of constant sorrow.
Yes.
I thought it would be good to get you to talk about this and perhaps introduce it for us at the end.
I think this may be the song Sarah is best known for. It's a song that really, it talks about, in sort of general terms, the situation, the way she grew up and what she faced as she grew up. And at the time she wrote it, she was up in the Lower East Side of New York, but still in extreme oppressive poverty. I think the fact that she lost so many loved ones and always, I think throughout her life, faced poverty on some level, it is her theme song. That, and I hate the capitalist system. So the thing about Sarah that people need to know is that she didn't write this song out of self-pity. She wrote it to let people know what was going on. She always sang it with a grin on her face. She did everything, even talking about her baby starving to death. There was this eerie grin on her face, I guess saying, I survived this.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, Sue, I wanted to thank you for spending the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate that.
I appreciate you having me on, and I've enjoyed talking to you too.
This is Sue Masek with The Girl of Constant Sorrow from her wonderful new album, Precious Memories. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Constant sorrow, I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the state where I was born and raised. My mother, how I hated to leave her. Happy. the miners don't get any dinner, and a tick of straw they call a bed. Well, we call this hell on earth, friends. I must bid you all goodbye. Oh, I know you all are hungry. Oh, my darling friends, don't cry.